It's here and now. Domenica Ruta's critically acclaimed memoir is out in paperback today, and though it's beautifully written, With or Without You is also a harrowing read. Domenica writes about growing up with her mom, Kathy, an often thrilling woman, everyone's favorite drug dealer, who shares her deluded dreams and her OxyContin with her daughter in their trash-filled home in Danvers, Massachusetts.
I remember nights when Mom would get really high and keep me up for hours, sitting on my bed and holding forth like a monarch unjustly deposed. We were not meant for this life, she would say. There were Cadillacs in our future. A summer house on Martha's Vineyard. I was going to grow up and marry a Kennedy, she promised. In reality, she sent me to a daycare center run by Catholic Charities, where I contracted diseases only babies in third world countries still get.
Domenica Ruta, reading from her memoir, With or Without You. Her mother told the New York Times last year that everything her daughter writes is true. That also includes Domenica's stories of a mom who believed that her daughter was smart and deserved a good education. Kathy helped sell a brick of cocaine to finance Domenica's Catholic school tuition and later pushed her to attend the prestigious Phillips Academy boarding school. We spoke with Domenica Ruta when With or Without You was published last year. Today, an excerpt of that conversation. We began by asking Domenica if her mother really did share her OxyContin with her.
Yeah, my mother was a narcotic omnivore well before she got a prescription to OxyContin. She loved cocaine. She smoked crack. She did other kinds of painkillers and tranquilizers when she got a hold of them. But in the early 90s, she got a legitimate prescription from a legitimate doctor for OxyContin, and she shared them with me. We didn't have basic things in our house. Our refrigerator was full of rotten food. We didn't have Q-tips. We were always running out of toilet paper, laundry detergent. But we had a full medicine cabinet full of high-grade narcotics.
And she'd break one up, mash it, and you could snort it if you wanted. At what age?
I didn't snort it until I was a teenager. In the beginning, my mother had some standards. She would break it in half, and she would give me a piece of her pill, and then she would snort the other half because that's how she told me, this is how mommy does it. Mommy snorts them. But when I was 10 or 11 years old, I would just swallow them.
Yeah. There was the filth. One day you take a drink from a soda can. It is filled with wet cigarettes from a party the night before. That was sickening to read. I know. What was it like to remember it and write it?
I can still feel it burning my esophagus. I mean, that's vivid isn't even the word because I remember that viscerally.
Continuing with this look back, your mom would rage at you. Suddenly the Wicked Witch would be there, but then also funny and someone who would dance with you and act out movies.
Mm-hmm. She was truly one of the funniest people I've ever met and brilliant in this natural way that wasn't educated or schooled or taught. She just had these sharp eyes and a quick tongue, and the two of them together could, burn you alive with insults, or it could, make you laugh for days.
Yeah. But not sharp eyes enough. Other adults would be dropping in and out of your life, including one you refer to as Uncle Vic, mm-hmm. who, how shall I say this? He attacked you?
Yeah, it was, it's hard to talk about. There's a distance when I write about it than when I talk about it. But yeah, there was sexual trauma. It comes with the territory that neglect comes along with all kinds of other side effects like diabetes in young children or sexual abuse or drug abuse or, failing grades. These are all the symptoms of a broken home.
Well, and here's where you describe this culture that you're in of poverty and drug addiction and neglect. You call it a nuanced arms race at the bottom of society, a system of threats and reprisals. If you report me to child services, I'll report your husband for selling pot. I mean, no, people knew what had gone on with you. Your mother seemed to know.
There wasn't a single adult in my life who had their act together enough to be responsible to report the things, the egregious crimes against humanity that were going on. Everybody had a drug problem. Everybody had an alcohol problem. Everybody had lots of credit card debt. Everybody had scams and frauds that they were trying to pull off. So there wasn't anybody who felt safe to speak up.
Yeah.
And, everybody had their own problems. There's also this really a real selfishness that comes along with these spiritual and mental and physical diseases where it's like, I'm taking care of my own and that's the best I can do. Yeah. There was just no one was thinking about that. Everyone was thinking about just getting through the day as miserably as possible and waking up to do it again.
Well, as we advance your story, Turns out you can write. You go to college. You go to graduate school in Austin, Texas. But it feels as if this fear starts to cripple you. You're practically a shut-in, drinking. How bad did it get?
You know, I consider myself a high-bottom drunk. I didn't end up homeless or I didn't crash a car or anything like that. But I would get scared. And I got to the point where I would hallucinate. I would, you know, I'd pass out and I'd come to with my heart beating like something out of an Edgar Allan Poe story. Mm-hmm. And every single sound I heard outside, I thought was somebody whispering. And, you know, I've realized later in recovery from alcoholism that that's what happens in late-stage alcoholism, and I'm really lucky that it didn't get worse. You know, my hands would shake violently in the mornings, and it took me a long time to connect that to, oh, yeah, that's because I drank an entire bottle of scotch last night, and I only weigh 110 pounds. And, you know, and for someone as smart as I was supposed to be, I wasn't adding things up very well.
Did you make the connection? Wow, I'm doing the same exact thing that as an 8-year-old I watched my mother do and it petrified me, and now I'm doing it.
Absolutely not. I arrogantly clung to the idea that because I had a good-looking resume with schools and achievements and jobs, that what I was doing was fine. I was different and I was better. And that was the lie I told myself, and that's the lie that almost killed me because I was becoming my mother in all the worst ways. And, you know, every once in a while there'd be a moment when whatever very compassionate and self-suffering boyfriend I was with at the time would say, you know, you remind me of your mother. You're acting like your mother. And, you know, that should have been my wake-up call, but it wasn't. It was something that I had to discover on my own.
Well, meanwhile, we mentioned how your mother, you know, supported you so much and applauded you as you went off to school. She also, to the reader, seemed to undermine you. She'd pull you out to stay home and watch movies with her. Same thing starts to happen when you're having the success in grad school. She starts calling you. She's hit rock bottom, lost everything. She wants you to help. She wants you to take over the mortgage. You eventually cut her off. How hard and painful was that?
It's still one of the most painful things I've ever done in my life. And I battle just crippling guilt around it. And on a daily basis, wonder if I've made a mistake or not. It still haunts me. I mean, everyone wants to take care of their family. And I was really, really close to my mother in this way that single parents and their only child are. It's a really special bond, and we had it. And to live without her in my life at all is still to this day really painful. I mean, you know, there's a part of me that wants to go home today and call her and say, I had the greatest radio interview with Robin Young and, you know, have her be proud of me. But I couldn't count on that always happening because if she was in a good mood, she would be happy for me. And if she was in a bad mood, she would hurl insults at me that I wasn't able to take.
Including that you'd abandon her.
Right, yeah. Right. And she suffered from a real ambivalence, which I think a lot of mothers feel, but no one talks about. You know, this, I love you so much that I hate you. I want you to do better than I did, but I'm incredibly envious that you're doing better than I did. I want you to have more, but I want it, not you. You know, and she was incapable of hiding it, which in many ways was a gift because it opened my eyes to a world that we live in that is brutal and strange, but also really poignant and powerful and full of a really powerful love.
Yeah. Domenica Ruta, her memoir is With or Without You. Thanks so much for speaking to us about it.
Thank you, Robin. It was a great conversation.
And we spoke with Domenica last March. To hear the full interview or to read an excerpt, go to hereandnow.org. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.